welcome inside the Crazy Ant Farm. How are you?
I feel great. How are you guys?
Oh, okay, we are living the dream, as always. Living the dream.
And, yes.
Oh, my
feeling
gosh.
Feeling good.
Yes.
Feeling good. This
yes.
is actually my first interview. Well, it's both of our first interview back since I got married. So
yes.
I'm very excited to
yes.
talk to you.
Congratulations. Gosh, let's not talk about marriage.
Oh, my
oh,
God. Yeah.
No, 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 no.
Yeah.
I would love to talk about marriage. No. Congratulations.
Yes.
Thank you. I appreciate it. To give you a little bit more insight on us and how we roll as a company and as a podcast, he is actually my father-in-law.
Yes.
I met him
he married the daughter.
And then I met his daughter.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Can we all just wish we had that relationship with our in-laws? Hello?
Right, that's the thing. That's
yeah,
the thing.
Yeah. I just...
God, everyone around the world is just gagging. We're like, we wish we had that.
You know,
no,
it,
trust
it's...
Trust me, we'll get to the part where you had to call your ex-boyfriend for
yeah.
like a little YouTube show. We'll get to that part.
Oh,
we'll
my gosh, that was so funny. And the really the only good thing he had to say was he remembers the horizontal stuff.
Yeah.
I
was like, come on, my man. You can do better than that. Come on.
Not that being all over the internet.
Oh, my, yeah, right. Like, I mean, as I said, there's so much to dive into talking to you about all of the stuff you've done. It's so funny. But all kidding aside, your background was like really awesome when we were doing our research, and kind of like you come from a very similar upbringing that we both did about the bouncing around all over the place and having the new town, new state, new school. How do we get friends? Like kind of a thing. We both kind of went through that as well, all for very different reasons. My dad passed, and mom was kind of like the same with your dad. Like, okay, job here, job there, job this. So I want to kind of dive in. Let's start. Like right there with that kind of going on and the constant movement and the having to constantly reestablish yourself kind of a thing. How did acting happen? Was that always on the radar? Was it something you always knew you wanted to do, or how do you fall into that?
Yes, it is. And it's crazy because I've said this in interviews in the past where I did this play in the second grade called It's a Jungle Out There, and I played this rainbow striped zebra, and I got off stage and I was like, Mom, Dad, this is what I want to do forever. And it was kind of that cliche story where I knew very young that that's what I wanted to do, but I didn't really know what that meant.
Right.
Obviously until I got older and I actually started working. And honestly, you know, traumatic childhood is it's a phrase that, you know, is a bit of a spectrum phrase. There's trauma in many, many forms. And I feel like acting's the one thing that was my constant. Mm. It was like, I always knew that that's what I wanted to do. So no matter what kind of bad stuff happened or what kind of trouble I got into or what kind of change was happening, I always kind of had that to go back to and ground myself with. So no matter what town we moved to, I was looking for where the drama club was. And I wanted to be in the school play. So even if I didn't have many friends, I knew that that's where I wanted to go, was the school play. So it was kind of the one thing that I've always known I wanted to do. And then that, because I was so damn headstrong and like, that's what I want to do, it was interesting all the little avenues on like how you think it's going to look to get there and how you're like totally wrong.
That's so true. So true.
It really is. Cause there's so many different aspects that you can take away from that because, you know, that's kind of your sense of home, right? You know, you bouncing around a lot as a child, but you finding your sense of home in a reality that's not even necessarily real or not real unless it's on the page, which is very interesting. I love that too, because there's all of these different aspects of actors and as human beings too, because as someone who moved around a lot, were you that quiet kid or did you try to make an impression and then it always kind of just fell back and like, oh shit, what the fuck did I just do?
It's interesting. I was never the quiet kid. I was bullied heavily in many different schools, which in a way was like, is this going to suck the life out of me?
Right.
And I think I went through phases as a child in social situations where, you know, I was loud and brash because I wanted to get attention, and maybe that didn't work. And then maybe I would kind of close off and act like I was too cool for everything because that was my defense mechanism at the time. Like, I think every strategy in a way was somewhat a armor to wear. But as a child in safety around my family, around people that I felt like really comfortable with, I was the farthest from shy, the farthest from quiet. If anything, it was the opposite. My parents told me this story recently. My dad was like, you know, we could never take you to a restaurant. And I was like, why? He's like, because you would just scream, yell. Even as a toddler, you would just be climbing on things, screaming. Then when you got older and you learned how to talk, you just wouldn't stop going to other people's tables and talking to these strangers. He's like, so we just like didn't want to take you out because you're such a handful. So I think in general, I was more of a shock factor child.
Yeah.
Than I was a quiet child.
You know, that's interesting, too. I just love this whole dynamic because, you know, you think about movies and TV and acting and all that, and it's an escape, right? It's how people escape from reality. And yet for you, it was your grounding of I'm doing all this other stuff, and that's where I go to not escape but to find some stability, which that in itself is very interesting. And then this is an industry that's built heavily on rejection. We like to call, you know, selection instead of rejection, but it is what it is, and it's tough. So for you to mention, you know, through the childhood, you're dealing with bullying and having to acclimate into different situations, and you're trying on different armors. You're kind of already going through a mental battle before you even get to the whole, now I'm going to go into an industry where I'm going to hear no all the time, and I'm not going to be good enough, or I'm not going to be... Did because I think I saw also that you said that you were kind of almost grateful for the bouncing around because it taught you how to be okay walking into a room of strangers or being able to adapt to a new location quickly. So did the bullying and the different, and I'm also curious as to why you were bullied. You're so just amazing and sweet. You seem like the last person I'd want to bully. But did those type, right? Like, come on, you're very sweet. Like, what was wrong with these kids? But did that kind of help you further on in the adulthood and in that career going,
yes,
hey, I've taken all the shit. I've had people call me this or call me that. I'm good with this, right? At that point, I feel like your skin was probably as tough as it needed to be to get rejected acting, right?
Yeah, I would agree with you drastically, Dustin. I think that, Robert Downey Jr. in his speech this year at the Oscars, he said, first and foremost, I want to thank my traumatic childhood.
Yes.
And I'd like to thank the Academy in that order. And I was like, I am stealing that
right
for every single award I ever receive.
Yes.
That's going to be it. Because I do think that whether this is right or wrong, I don't necessarily think it's the right thing, but it did, having bullying and trauma and moving around a lot and having these things that are very not stable.
Right.
And having a sense of confidence in an unstable environment, I think definitely prepared me for Hollywood and an acting career, because I honestly can't imagine coming from a space of stability and not having a lot of change and not having a lot of instability and then getting thrown into Hollywood and being like, enjoy.
Right.
Hope you have a good support network. It definitely prepared me because it can be like dark and like hard, like really mentally hard. I mean, even working now, this morning I woke up at 5:55 a.m., which is not when I wake up, had a full blown anxiety panic attack. That's not my norm, by the way. My partner, he's the one with anxiety, not me.
Right.
It was about work. It was me being, we had some executives come on set yesterday and a couple of, a new guest star who's a pretty big name. And, you know, I was a little nervous. I wanted to make sure I did a good job. And I left work thinking, yeah, that was fine. I did great. It was fine. And I went home and I woke up at 5 in the morning, sweating, going, it wasn't fine. I didn't get my line right, and I should have done better, and ended up, you know, and it's such a weird, even like once you book the job, you still have this insatiable need to please and to make sure you do well and to have the audience like you. And, you know, that's hard enough at a regular normie job in the office where you want to prove to your boss you did well or to your parents that you did well. But TV and film, or, you know, the audience, it brings it to another level. So I feel like, yes, my childhood prepared me so much for that, but it honestly just never goes away. I think it's something that every actor and every performer, and in a sense, every human has to come to terms sure. with and kind of figure out how they navigate their own process of pleasing others and having the anxiety of doing a good job or not being good enough, et cetera. And yeah, your skin, I heard two things recently. One, I think developing a tough skin is so important and so helpful for those kinds of things. But then you don't want a skin that's so tough that nothing can get in.
Right.
And nothing can come out. Yep. You know, it's like the skin and the armor is great to protect you. But then also, like, love then doesn't get in. And then, like, what's the whole point?
Yep.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I love that, though, because, I mean, there's so many different aspects to take away from that. If you don't know, we also have a mental health podcast. So talking about mental health is something that we are very familiar with. And it's very opening and it's very honest because, you know, once we always call it our biweekly therapy session because we are able to just talk about it on a public forum just to, like, get it out there. So it's always very it's very freeing to be able to do that. And I do also want to say thank you for sharing your past traumas with the bullying aspect, because that is very difficult to be able to relive, and to have someone like yourself share that, it helps the next person who listens to this or listens to your story. So that's always very important. But while you were talking and speaking about anxieties, about time and how, because we always know, we're filmmakers ourselves. So we know time is money when you're on set. He likes to refer to it more than I do because he's an old person.
When it was actual film and you were burning it, and you couldn't just hit erase and start over.
But I'm curious, though, do you have more anxiety on a television set that is a well-oiled machine that needs to produce episodes every single week rather than a film set that can take a little bit more time, but not much, because, like we just said, time is money? So I'm just curious about the anxiety between the two creative processes.
TV's fast.
Yeah.
It is so fast. I mean, I did an indie film with my partner in 2022. And, you know, the film was 98 pages long. And we shot it over 3 months.
Wow.
You know, but a total of maybe 70 days or something, like, over the course of 3 months. Don't quote me on numbers. But that being said, I'm like, we're shooting 57 pages in 8 days.
Yeah.
And not only are we shooting that, we are shooting usually lots of action scenes, big, you know, lots of background, lots of, you know, it's busy. You've got 200 people on set all trying to communicate. I mean, anyone knows that, like, yes, it's easier to do a large job with more people, but also it's harder because everyone has to communicate, and getting 200 people to communicate is like the hardest thing to do. So to answer your question, I think you get the anxiety of, like, making sure you hit your line, you hit your mark, say it right, on any set. I feel like every actor feels that way, but for TV, for sure. I mean, let's get 2 takes, let's turn around, let's move on. We've got a 12-hour day, and if we go overtime, CBS has to pay overtime, and then they're going to be pissed at me, and then I'm nervous if I'm going to get to be cast in season 2.
We don't need that.
No.
Need that.
And yeah, much more corporate, a lot more politics, it feels like.
And you talked about, too, the pressure that you feel, you know, like, when you booked it, and now there's even more pressure, and I would think that elevates even more when it comes out of the gate as a huge hit show, because now the executives are showing up. Now it's a moneymaker. Now it's got to be, you've got to hit it. Boom, 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 boom. Because it's not just one of those, is it going to find an audience? Maybe we'll move it to a different at night. It seems to be okay. It's got a, no, this is like, boom, hit. And now it's running and you're going to, oh yeah, I can't miss a line. I can't fuck up a day. I've got to, like, you know, so the pressure's got to be insane on that. And, you know,
we had the executives and the showrunner there yesterday.
Yeah.
And I just could not get this one damn line out. And, you know, like, in the long run, in the big picture of life, who fucking cares?
Exactly. Exactly.
But also, billions of dollars and audience and in my job, you know, like, it's, it is this weird dichotomy of both of, like, this is the end of the world. And also, who fucking cares?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. At the end of the day. Right. It was a line. Yeah. It was kind of a thing.
Yeah. Just, and if it's shit, they'll cut it and they'll move on.
Right. Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly. Well, we've been kind of tiptoeing around it, but we're talking about Tracker, everybody. And
yes.
We're super excited to deep dive into everything with your involvement with the series. While watching the series, I have realized Patrick Dempsey from Grey's Anatomy, that's when he started to be my man crush. But now, Justin Hartley has now become my man crush because of Tracker. So, and I have to give kudos to you because of that, because the dynamic that you two have on screen every time you guys are scene partners is absolutely phenomenal. So bravo to that. You make me want to potentially question my sexuality, and my wife's over here looking at me like,
dude, you just married my daughter, bro. What are we doing right now? We're less than a week into this whole thing. What are we doing? Like,
but I mean, it's such a brilliant show. And I mean, it kicked off right after the Super Bowl, if no one knew, and it drew in an amazing audience. And to be able to find its footing at CBS, where I feel like it's so good at these type of procedural shows, this kind of like crime drama type of thing. Let's start at the very beginning. Was it a very standard process of, you know, your agent was like, hey, I might have a role for you?
No, it was so weird. It was so weird. And in general, ever since one, COVID, and two, actor strike, writer strike, the industry in Hollywood has changed a lot. We're doing so many self-tapes. We're not doing as many screen tests. It's just, I mean, when you go into it as an actor, going into, you know, moving from Shawnee, Oklahoma to Hollywood, you're like, already, I don't know. I have no fucking idea how this works.
Yeah.
Who knows? No one teaches you. You get a degree in acting at school, and no one, you never learn that shit.
No,
you just learn, you know, how to memorize lines and how to stretch and like, that's, so one, it's already complicated and confusing, but two, then all of a sudden with COVID and strikes, like, they made it even more confusing because it's changing again. So in my particular scenario, I self-taped for the role. At the time, the role was a possible recurring guest star. And I just had one scene in the pilot, or two scenes in the pilot. They were thinking that maybe my character would return maybe a couple more times throughout the season. But she wasn't written in the books nor in the original idea of the show as someone who's there all the time. And Ken Olin and Justin, you know, they worked on This Is Us for years. They've got great rapport. I met them on the pilot and they were just so awesome. Just, I don't know. I kind of felt like an uncle and a brother, you know, just like shoot the shit. And I'm like, shut up, you guys. And they're like, shut up, Fiona. And it didn't feel like high stakes. It felt very comfortable. And that's the weird thing about doing guest stars, you know, on television, is that you're getting thrown into a group of people that already know each other.
Right.
You know, you have to bring this confidence as if you are meant to be there, but you're always thinking, am I supposed to be here? So it's an interesting kind of dynamic energetically when you go on set as a guest star, and they really made it to where it felt comfy. So after the pilot, we shot the pilot, before we even knew about whether or not we were going to get a full season, Ken reached out to me and he was like, hey, we really like your character and your chemistry with Justin. We're trying to move some stuff around. And then she turned into a series regular. So it was like, you know, an actor's dream to like get a line and then let the line stretch you. You know, they bring me back. So that's kind of like a, you know, it was like a weird, it was hard enough to get the guest star role, but then to like get that stretched into an actual regular role was like, wow, this is not normal. This is different.
Okay, well, I want to say that, one, I think it's a huge testament to your acting ability and the skill and that you bring to it. Because, honestly, anybody who watched This Is Us, let's be honest, Justin had some stuff that was just, like, level, like, so for Ken to come to you and say, hey, your chemistry is right there and you're pulling these things off with Justin, that is a huge credit to go, you're right there with Justin and we need to have you more there, right? So that's huge. And just real quick, I want to show my age. I remember Justin all the way back from like Smallville. And he did a little, they were going to spin Aquaman off into its own series and he did that pilot. So, you know, I don't, Logan, if he's your man crush, you should watch the Aquaman pilot. He's like basically naked the whole time and it's like, you know, just go have some fun, my friend. No. But anyway, and I even remember Ken Olin from 30 something way back in the day. So I know these guys and I know what they're bringing to it, right? So I think CBS, though, for you, and let's bring up your other one because we're both huge fans of the other one, too. We were devastated when Rebecca was no longer on Fire Country. We're like, what the fuck? Where is Rebecca? And by the way, where'd Freddie go? Because we love W. Trey, too. We interviewed him, and he's great. And we're like, what do you mean Rebecca and Freddie are gone? Like, what is going on? But
I love Trey. Just texted him this morning. I know.
Yeah,
they just be getting rid of people.
We didn't understand it because the whole point he went to take the fall and go back to prison is to save Freddy, and now Freddy's gone. Like, what the fuck is going on? But anyway, back to your character there. It's funny how you said that you come on with this confidence level and these type things, because that character Rebecca was very just like, bam, confident. You're going to do what I want you to do, and I'm going to jump your bones right now, or I'm going to get you out of prison right now, kind of a thing. She wasn't. And let's be honest about it. Brody ain't no small man. So when Rebecca's like, I'm just going to jump you right now, you're going to do it, all right? So, but the level that you brought to that role, that one that you could be somebody that could have that back and forth with Brody, but then also the genuine sentimentality of the dynamic with Freddie going, I'm going to get you out. You're an innocent man. I don't know what I can do. I'm going through my own shit, but I'm going to get you. I got your back kind of a thing. That dynamic, I think the executives at CBS and Ken and all them, I think it was a no-brainer. They're probably like, hire her for Tracker. It's like she's already great there.
I wish I could be a fly on the wall and know what internal conversations were happening inside the CBS offices. But CBS really, I've got to give a shout out to Claudia Lyons. She was at ABC as the VP of talent and casting over there when I did the ABC showcase in 2018.
Okay.
And so she got to know me pretty well in almost like a student-like setting where, you know, she was watching me work, how I work with the script. And then when she moved over to talent and casting at CBS, I think she kind of kept me in mind. And so I think, you know, as they were auditioning and as I was getting little roles here and there for different CBS shows, you know, she knew not only what I would bring onto a set regarding a self-tape, but kind of like my energy or maybe my work ethic or something like that, which I'm assuming, I mean, if I was an executive, it's a huge deal because it doesn't matter necessarily how great of an actor someone is. If they are bad energy on set, if they're going to bring the vibes down on set, because everyone is working 16-hour days, no one's seeing their damn families. Everyone has to be so dedicated to this and so willing to make sacrifices to make this thing happen that if there's someone there who's ungrateful, if there's someone there who's causing, you know, problems when it's not for the greater good,
right?
You know, it doesn't matter how great you can act. Like, no, we can't afford that. There's too many people involved. So I think executives do take that into consideration. And I would hope to think that, you know, that has something to do with casting as well on a bigger space. But Fire Country, you know, I didn't know that I was going to die. We were shooting episode. I love that this is over now so I can talk about it. We were shooting episode 14 I think I died in episode 15. But we were shooting episode 14, and one of the guys on set, he was like a tech guy. I won't say his name. He came up to me and he was like, "Man, you know, those writers really, I'm so pissed. Like, I'm going to really miss you." And I was like, "What?
What?"
And he was like, "Because on next episode, you're, and he realized kind of in the moment what was happening." Yeah. And I was like, "Shit. Next episode, what?"
Yeah, like,
and you know, that's just not how you want to find out.
No, right. Definitely not.
And I called the showrunner and I was like, "What's going on?" And she was like, "I'm sorry, I didn't want you to find out this way." And you know, but that is very, sadly, that is very common. Mm. Actors are the last to know freaking anything.
Yeah.
Ever. And I don't know exactly why. There's probably a lot of reasons. One, maybe because we're like little sensitive babies. And so, you know, just tell us last and get it over and get out of here.
My guess would be, just speaking as a director and coming from it from that point of view kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Do you think that if you know it's coming, it might somehow affect your performance? Right?
Totally.
Like if you're, because nobody walks around life every day going, "I'm going to die tomorrow, so here's how I'm going to act." Right? It's supposed to be unexpected. So if the actor knows it's coming, it may indeed affect how they change the performance of the character.
Totally.
So,
totally,
I mean, that's just my guess. If that would be my approach of not telling you.
yes like... and you know, of course you think about it like that and you're like, yeah, don't tell me, but every actor is gonna be like, "I'd be fine."
Of course. Yeah, of course.
We're lying to you. That's a lie. But yeah, Fire Country was amazing. I mean, Max Tyria, I shadowed him. He directed the last episode of season one and I shadowed him on that episode, and it was so awesome to see someone work both sides like that. I mean, in general, being a number one is so hard. Being a director, you know, is like playing God.
Oh, yeah.
You have to have like this bird's eye view of understand. Like, it is insanity. And to do both at the same time is like basically being an alien.
Yeah, without doubt.
So I learned a lot on that show, and that's a good group of people. Shout out Diane Farr, who's basically my big sister for life.
Yes. I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, but I mean, you've tried so many different things. You've been able to experience so many different things in the entertainment industry. And, you know, since we're having this conversation, interviewing you, the tables used to be flipped. You used to be kind of like a talk show host. So, I mean, how does that happen? How do you transition from that into being this amazing actress now? So, like, and how would you prepare and all of these different things? Because we went back and watched some of your clips and they're pretty funny. You're pretty great. So, I mean, do you ever miss interviewing people? Do you ever miss being on that side of the couch?
You started the question. I was like, which I miss, by the way. You know, it's interesting. As I've become more successful as an actor, especially in television, you know, film is a lot different and theater is even more different. But I'm having to learn to be more myself all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, there's Daniel Day-Lewis stuff where you're transforming into this other thing. And then there's, you know, kind of procedural day-to-day stuff where honestly it's about making these words that are almost inaccessible. You know, we're giving you so much exposition to tell you this story about the guy who killed the woman and how we're trying to find her, but she was poisoned. You know, like there's all this exposition that in order to get it across to the audience in a way that doesn't feel like they're being told exposition,
right,
we have to make it as natural as possible, which means making it as us as possible. So to answer your question, I feel like what hosting did for me was made me become more me. And to stop really getting so concerned with like how the character would do something and then just be like, just say it, just say it and make it. Does it feel honest? Just then say the damn line.
Yes.
Because with Get It Girl, you know, we would have teleprompter stuff and they would give us some prompt and some brief that we had to follow. But mostly it was like, just be yourself and have a good time and listen.
That's right.
And so, you know, that's what you guys do every day too. So it's funny how so many people are like, "I could never act." And I'm like, you probably could.
Yeah.
actually, you know, maybe doing Shakespeare is a little bit of a different niche, but in general, like, listen, be you.
Yeah.
If you can memorize lines, like, it really does compact into something as basic as that, I think. And, I hope if that gives people some confidence to think that they can do.
So listen, this podcast is specifically geared towards up-and-comers and people trying to break into the industry. And we talk about that all of the time. And in fact, what you were just saying, I was applauding because it's so dynamic in both on our podcast side and as filmmakers. Because if you go back and listen to our first few episodes of this show, it was very scripted and very just like it was on a timeline and where you had to hit the end of the block. It was awful. It was all, and we were like, this sucks. We just need to be us. We need to be conversational. We just need to have a good time. And then it just blew up. You know, we haven't been around for 7 years because it sucks. You know, we've been around 7 years. But it took us to figure out people don't want to hear that. They want to just have us have fun and feel like they're in the room with us and having a good time.
Yeah.
And as directors, we approach our casting, and when we get on set, we're very actor-friendly because I'm that same way of what you just said. I said, listen, I don't want you to be such and such playing such and such. I want the character to be you. If this line doesn't seem natural to you, say it how you would say it because it's going to come across as unnatural if it's something you wouldn't say. So just, I'm very loose. I'm very like, if you don't change the scene, if you don't change what the scene is trying to say, I don't give a crap about the locked to the dialogue. Deliver it the way you would deliver it as if this was you and you were going through this conversation, because that's real. And that is what's going to connect to the audience. That's how you make that connection to the audience. And I love that you brought that up because I think it's so critically important to understand that, it's acting, but it's also real. Because you probably know somebody that's gone through that, or you've gone through that. And the more of that you can bring to it, the more connectability there is to the audience. So
I think a lot of the time, breaking in to the industry requires that specific skill. Mm. Now, obviously, whenever we're moving on to other roles and we're getting, I mean, I would love to play characters that are so, so, so different from me that I have to do the research and I have to do interviews and I have to dig down and create parts of me that weren't there. Like, of course, artistically and creatively, yes, I want to do that. But I don't think that we as actors get the opportunity to get to that place to create in that layered depth until we are able just to do us. Because, I mean, you look at every freaking star on the planet and they became a star because of what they brought, not because they turned themselves into something else. Mm. If anything, they had something deep, deep inside them that they needed to bring out as opposed to create out of thin air. And I have a lot of friends that are some of the most talented, phenomenal actors that, you know, London theater trained, 48-hour improv. Like, these people are just so talented. And when they get an audition, they're like, okay, I can do this. And I'm like, just say the fucking line.
Exactly.
Throw it away. Say the line. Be you. Who gives a shit? And also, the script may be written a certain way, and that may not be you. And what I say to my mates, I'm like, if that's not you, don't try and be that.
Yes.
Don't book this role. Use this as an opportunity to do this the way you would do it, and you probably won't book this role. But that casting director is going to go, holy shit, look at that guy. Well, he's not right for this, but he's perfect for that thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, I do think I agree with you. It's just like finding what's comfortable to you, natural to you. You're good enough. You're more than enough. Don't be anything else than you.
That's right. And Logan, I know you're jumping. I just, one more thing, because to take it way back to what you just said about your reputation, about how you how you are on set, how you're grateful to be there. That's the other thing. I think a lot of people that aren't in the industry yet don't realize how small the community actually is. Everybody knows everybody, and so your reputation, if it gets out that you're stellar to work with and you're a real gem of a human being and people like you and that's you. That's who everybody knows you. But on the flip side of that, if you're a pain in the ass and you're ungrateful and you think you're better than everybody and you're a real asshole, that's who you are. And it gets real quick. I think people don't understand how quickly that spreads as to who you are. So I love that you brought that up too, because it's so critically important to know that no matter if you're that extra on a set or if you're number one on the call sheet, you better be acting the same way, because at some point, you're not always number one on the call sheet. Yeah. You're going to come back down at some point, and those people that you passed up and treated like shit might be the people that need to hire you one day. And so you better be real smart about how you're treating people.
But there's also a middle ground, because I do know some people who they know this. And so they go above and beyond to be super nice to everybody, to where it's almost not authentic.
Oh, they're.
And there's a desperation there that my partner and I talk about this a lot, because he's going to be so pissed that I say this, but he never wants anyone to think he's an asshole. He's a cis hetero white male as well, so you know, at the end of the day, he really, really doesn't want to make, he wants no one to think he's an asshole. And I was like, well, babe, are you an asshole? And he was like, no, of course not. And I'm like, then fuck anyone who thinks you're an asshole.
That's right.
So like, you don't have to go around trying to prove to people that you're nice if you're just nice.
Exactly.
And nice people can have bad days.
Yep.
And nice people can lose their cool. And, you know, I think there has to be some kind of grace given for that.
Without doubt.
Anybody that, you know, holds a grudge. But I think that comes across. And there's something about a confidence of knowing yourself in that regard, too. Like, I think that I'm a genuinely grateful and nice human being. And I also can say things in a way where I sound like a total bitch. And I don't mean it. And I think that the people that know me know that. And they're like, oh, okay, that was a little, don't talk to me like that. And I'm like, oh, God, I'm so sorry.
Right.
So, you know, there is a middle ground between like, are you an asshole? Well, don't be one.
Be a little spicy sometimes.
That's right.
Spicy. It's fine. It's fine. I love it. Well, something else we're trying out in 2024 is a great way to end our interviews, and we call them our popcorn questions. They're a little fun. They may make you, you know, go back in your memory bank and try to think about some things, but I like them. And I mean, so far we've gotten positive reviews.
And some interesting answers.
For sure. But the first one is, what was the funniest moment or most memorable moment on the Tracker set? Dun, dun, dun.
I know. And like, I don't want to like leave too much empty space here. We're in a podcast. Everyone's like, doo, doo, doo.
You're good. It's an edited podcast.
That's right. We edit. Oh, you're good to go, man.
Yeah, thank you. <right. laughs>
The funniest and or most memorable moments. Gosh, it's funny because it feels all kind of like a blur. And I probably have funnier moments or more memorable moments, but the one thing that just sticks out to me right now is that we shot episode 5 in negative 11 degree weather. I have never been so cold in my life. and we were shooting outside. There was a parking lot. Episode 5 has come out. There's a parking lot scene where I'm leaving the courthouse and this guy named Lutro comes and kidnaps me. Mm-hmm. And the costume department said, hey, do you want to wear some gloves? And I said, no, I'm on the phone coming out of the courthouse. That wouldn't make any sense. I would be putting them on, fumbling. It wouldn't make any sense. So I'm going to pass on the gloves. By take 2 or take 3, I was like, I'm a fucking idiot. Fuck logic. Who cares about what's logical? I should have chose to have gloves. And I think about that now all the time, because Ethan Hawke does this interview where he's like, we're the logic police. Like, the actor's job is to go, no, that wouldn't be real. The character wouldn't do that. It doesn't feel natural. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel normal. And then there's just like, put on the fucking gloves. It's negative 11 degrees outside.
That's right.
You know
That's
what right. I mean?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
And it's such a weird thing where you know, as an artist, you're like, of course I would. It's all for the art. And then you're like, fuck all that.
That's right. That's when the money people go, you can't get sick and have to throw off the shooting schedule. You got to be exactly. here every day. Put the damn gloves
if
on.
I lose my fingers.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Rainey can't take phone calls.
That's right. Okay? That's right.
So yeah, I won't forget that. I think about it all the time.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Let's see. Let's give you another one. So we're gonna go from like really lighthearted and kind of stuff, and then we just go deep into the Barbara Wawa make you cry moment.
My favorite place to be.
So if you could go back and tell your 10-year-old self anything, a piece of advice, something that you would want her to know, what would you tell her?
I talk to little me a lot, actually.
I love that.
Especially if I have moments of I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I close my eyes. I try to feel my own heartbeat. And I say, hey, little Fiona, how do you want to feel? And she usually answers back. If I could tell her something now that I've known up until 36 years old, I would probably say slow down. There's no rush, and everything that is meant for you will come to you. Mm. You don't have to go searching for it all the time. And also, there's no such thing as cool.
There you go.
You just don't even worry about being cool. It doesn't exist. No such thing. Slow down, have fun, and there's no such thing as cool.
Yeah, I love that.
Great. I don't know about y'all, but I feel like the temperature in the room just changed.
Yeah, I
need some gloves.
Yeah,
where are my gloves?
Yeah, like, yeah. Forget editing that out, Logan. Right, that's a very dramatic pause, a very deep reflection. Right, the look on your face—you could just tell you were going deep into a reflective moment. Yeah. I'm like, that's got to be left in right there. The audience could suffer through the moment of silence right there on the listening side, because the video side's gonna love it.
Oh, thank you guys. I really appreciate you just like willing to jump in and chat. These are my favorite moments.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. And the final question of the entire interview, obviously before promoting social media and things like that.
Of course.
Are you happy with your career so far?
I'm the luckiest bird in the world. I really am. And I know it's going to change up and down, and it got here a lot later than I thought it was going to. And none of it matters. I feel like the luckiest girl in the world. So to answer your question, hell yeah, I'm happy.
Love it. Love it.
That is fantastic. Oh my goodness. Well, listen, thank you so much for coming
you.
On the show and getting crazy with us. It is
yes, and congratulations to both of you.
Thank
officially
you.
Officially family now.
Yes, officially yeah. It's just the paperwork now. I've been calling him the son for like 6 years, you know. We just made it official now.
Yeah, no, thank you. I had a blast. I had an absolute
blast. Of course. Well, you know, it's all about social media now, so where can people follow you?
Fiona Renee is literally my handle on everything and anything. My dad made sure I got that real early. So thanks, Dad. Fiona Renee on everything. And I don't ever use Facebook, so I apologize. But I'm not bad with Instagram. Could be better.
Yeah.
I think you're pretty good.
Yeah, just a little following the feed. You're pretty good. You got it. You're better than me. So there you go.
Thanks.
Oh,
so funny.
Also, so open invite, because you've just been an absolute gem to talk to, and I think that we could just keep talking for hours because you're so easy to talk to and so enjoyable. And we didn't even scratch it. You know, there was a great thing that I saw you say that I would really love to readdress, maybe even on the mental health podcast, about how you talk about when you came back from Europe and you had lost your mother and you were having to learn how to deal with grief and love at the same time. How do I deal with this loss, but then learn to deal with, I'm in this new city with this new career and everything is different.
Yeah.
I would really love to talk about that at some point with you, because I think that's just beautiful. I think that would be such a conversation to have. And glory days.
When season two.
Yes.
Oh, glory days.
We didn't even talk about your glory days. I loved that on Lincoln Lawyer. So we got to have you back to talk about that as well. Like, oh my goodness, right? Like, we opened the show talking about your horizontal. We didn't even go to the sex worker role. Like, what the hell? Epic fail. No.
But season three of Netflix of Lincoln Lawyer is coming out on Netflix.
Yes.
I want to say at the end of the year. I don't know exactly the date, but it's coming.
Yes.
And we got renewed for a season two of Tracker.
Yes.
Which we'll probably start shooting in July. So once, you know, it'll be a perfect excuse for us to come back and meet again.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
Exactly. Exactly. Time flies when you're having fun. That's
I agree.
Sure. That's
I agree. This is a blast and super easy. So thank you guys so much.
Of course.
Of course. Of course. Everybody be sure to check out Tracker on CBS and Paramount Plus. And Fiona, thank you again so much for coming on the show. Have a great rest of your evening and we'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you. Bye. 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 Bye.
Bye. Oh boy, oh boy, that is a great first interview after our break. Man.
Yes!
Wow, that was phenomenal. We really could have talked to her forever. She's in that handful to where the conversation just kept going.
Yeah, it felt so like we've known her forever. It felt like we've known her for years and she's just a part of the family and we're like, oh my gosh. And so impressive. I love just the way her approaches to everything that she does, whether it's a recurring role or a starring role or whether she's dealing with life and bullying. It's just, what an inspirational interview for anybody out there going, you know what? Whatever you're kind of going through, you got this. You're going to be okay, and you're still going to be excel and live life great. And I love conversations like that, man.
Yes, for sure, for sure. Well, thank you again, Fiona, for coming on the show.